The following podcast is rated P for poor Netflix and hillbilly. Let me try that again. Hillbilly.
Hairball.
Oscar nominated hillbilly elegy. Welcome, everybody, to Rated P. I am Brighton.
And I am Yates. In episode 2 of our shortened awards season that we are doing right now, we are coming at you with Oscar nominations, who was nominated, who wasn't nominated, and what do we think about all of that?
Absolutely. There's a lot to go through here. We gave you our reactions to the Golden Globes, which is, at the moment, the other main award show that has happened in the world of film to date. We have now gotten the nominations for the Academy Awards, which is the final award show of the season that is happening, of course, in a very much pushed back calendar this year. Usually happens in February, but they've pushed it back to April 25th because of everything going on with the pandemic. Don't really know what the show is going to look like at the moment, Yates. We don't know who the host is. All we know is the date. We know that Steven Soderbergh is actually going to be involved in producing the show, which I find very exciting.
So they're going to have a whole bit where Brad Pitt comes in and steals the Oscar, or George Clooney. Brad Pitt, God damn it.
It could be both. Why not?
I bungled that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I like the idea, though.
Thank you. I did not know that. That's super exciting. Always nice to see Soderbergh involved in really anything at this point. But yeah, I know, you know, the pandemic and trying to do more things virtually or whatever has been good for some award shows. Like, I know a lot of people said the Grammys did a really good job with it. It's been bad for some other award shows. I don't remember. Was it the Emmys where they just had someone waiting outside your house with an Emmy, and then if you didn't win, they just left?
Yeah, but I kind of like that. I think it works better than what happened with the Globes, which was just people kind of sitting on Zoom. There wasn't really much of a like an interaction. I don't know. I think it'll be up to the Oscars if to get people interested in the show itself beyond the films. It'll be they might need something with a little bit of twist to the whole virtual format. But yeah, it's not looking like, unless Hollywood elite are all fully vaccinated by April 25th, that it's going to be very in person.
Here's my take. All right. No general attendees, but you have like a different site for every award and all the nominees are there. So you're in a small potential, probably socially distanced setting. And then if someone can't make it, then they zoom in. Right. But you know, that could be an interesting way to do it. But the possibilities are endless, and there's no way to know until we know, and we don't currently know.
It's true. A good reason why people tune in, though, Yates, is, of course, because of the films themselves that are up for awards. Let's run through some of the major categories of the 93rd Academy Awards that we got last week. Best Picture race, the one most people focus on, 8 films nominated for Best Picture so far, or I should say, period, this year. The Father is the first. Judas and the Black Messiah. I'm going through by alphabetical order, by the way. Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, and Sound of Metal, followed by Trial of the Chicago 7 to round things out. Turning to Best Actor category, you've got Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal, Chadwick Boseman for his performance in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Anthony Hopkins for The Father, Gary Oldman for Mank, Steven Yeun for Minari. Actor in a supporting role, Best Supporting Actor, nominees were Sacha Baron Cohen for The Trial of the Chicago 7, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, Paul Racy for Sound of Metal, excited to talk about that, Lakeith Stanfield as well for Judas and the Black Messiah.
For actress in a leading role, we have also for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Viola Davis, Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Vanessa Kirby, Pieces of a Woman, Frances McDormand in Nomadland, Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman, actress in a supporting role, Maria Bakalova for her role in Borat's subsequent movie film, Delivery of Prodigious Bribe to American Regime for Make Benefit, Once Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. We have Glenn Close for... we have Olivia Colman for The Father.
Hillbilly Elegy is the movie that Yates cannot bring himself to say.
We have Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Yoo Jung-yoon for Minari. Just a couple more of the other big ones, which we consider as directing, and then both screenplay awards. For director, we have Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round, David Fincher for Mank, Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman, certainly taking home the best name of the category, but maybe not the award. We'll have to wait till April 25th to find out.
Rounding out the screenplay, you've got adapted screenplay, the nominees, Borat subsequent movie film, The Father, Nomadland, One Night in Miami, and The White Tiger. And then original screenplay, Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, Trial of the Chicago 7. And a bunch of other categories that we're going to be mentioning as we break this down. But Yates, just what are your general reactions to these nominations? What stands out to you as a whole in terms of movies that got recognized and filmmakers that got recognized?
Well, Mank got recognized for sure. You know, not surprisingly, here's the take. I'm a little surprised Minari didn't get more. Honestly, I mean, you know, 6 nominations, nothing to sneeze at by any means, but it also, like, I would have thought it was the clear front runner for most nominations this year. So I was a little surprised when it didn't get that. You know, and then there were some that didn't do quite as well as a lot of people expected in the nominations department. I know that, you know, you and I have talked a lot about Defy Bloods, which only got 1 nomination. So, you know, there are certainly surprises and such in every category. I would say those are some of the highlights that jump out to me right off the bat.
To me, I think it immediately stands out kind of what a difference the Academy has made in the last few years to really diversify their options for nominations. And it could be that their voting base is different. I would think that that is a large contributor, but we don't know for sure. What we do know is that they've been working to make sure that their voter base is not as white and as male-driven as it has been for many, many years in the past. That really stood out to me.
That is totally true. I mean, this is not your daddy's Oscars, right? Like, this is much more, I frankly, like, 21st century than a lot of the even very recent awards have felt. You know, obviously there was the whole Oscar so white, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
I think it was a little longer than that at this point, but it doesn't feel all that long ago. I mean, Moonlight was kind of that, you know, you could call that quote unquote the ending to that chapter, but that was the 2017 awards. But okay, the Oscars, yeah. So white had been going on for a couple years ahead of that too.
Yeah. So, you know, it certainly seems like they are listening and they are adapting and broadening the scope of movies that the Academy, you know, members of the Academy watch and vote on, which is good. I think it makes it a better show. I think that, you know, here you have some incredible, you know, you have an incredible diversity of nominees at, you know, could it be better? Yeah, I'm sure. But compared to what it has been, it's certainly an improvement, which can't accept as the optimal state, but you can appreciate the steps that they've made. And I think that you have a much more well-rounded slate of nominees as a result of that.
Yeah, so to run through some of those different statistics that jump out in terms of the diversity of nominations, 70 women up for 76 different Oscars, which the Academy made sure to note is a record for women nominated at the awards show. Also, 9 of the 20 acting nominees are people of color, which was definitely a big a big step forward compared to the acting categories in the past. We also had a bunch of history made in terms of those certain women getting nominated. You also had the first Muslim nominated for Best Actor, with Riz Ahmed getting the nod there, and Steven Yeun in the same category becoming the first Asian American nominated for Best Actor. And Yates, I definitely think that it is the Academy taking steps forward to improve on that front. I also think those statistics or that diversity is helped by this being a totally strange year for films. If we had gotten the full slate of movies that were supposed to come out in 2020, it would just be really, I'd be very curious to see what would have ended up being nominated, and maybe we'll see in the next year or two as those 2020 films, original 2020 films, do ultimately come out. But this selection is very heavy on films that were streaming ones and films that are much smaller and maybe got more attention because we weren't getting new blockbusters every single weekend. And, you know, I think that makes a difference. The voting body are you know, actors and filmmakers in Hollywood, and people who like, when I say filmmakers, not just directors, people who kind of do everything for films, you know, they're not going to be able to watch small indie movies every weekend, I imagine. I mean, they probably should if they want to vote fairly, but like a lot of them will still go, I imagine, see the big movies too. And so this year being totally different in terms of what movies I think gets people's attention because they're on streaming services and because we didn't have major blockbusters during the, you know, a large majority of 2020, I think it ultimately reflected on a variety of nominations that I personally am super excited about and that I think aptly reflects this past year in terms of what the very good films were.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been stuck at home for the past year and it really has changed the movies that I've watched, certainly, and the fact, and I think we've definitely talked at different points about this and about how, you know, the average American moviegoer, movies that they would usually see like Black Widow or James Bond haven't been happening. And yeah, so not only do you have the voters doing that, I think just in terms of the discussion around indie films has been heightened just in, you know, in a cultural sense. And you certainly see that reflected here. I mean, the Best Picture nominees combined made $14.1 million at the domestic box office. That's like Avatar sneezed and made that. So, you know, it really is, it's streaming, it favored streaming because you had to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hop into some of the surprises. You kind of mentioned Minari, which you think is snubbed in some categories. I think it is surprising that it did get six nominations. One thing, just as kind of like a general surprise to me before we get into specific films, I think it's interesting how top-heavy these academies seem to be, Yates, because you had Mank lead all nominations with 10, but then you had six other films get six nominations in total. Judas and the Black Messiah, Nomadland, Minari, one of them, Sound of Metal, Trial of the Chicago 7, and The Father. And that's pretty good. I feel like usually you see those spread out a little bit more, but these are all, I think, pretty good films that are getting that recognition. And the one out of that group that jumps out to me that I did actually find to be a surprise is Sound of Metal, which I said is my favorite movie from this past year. I just was not expecting it to get this much recognition.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, I agree. I think that those are, well, I haven't seen The Father, but the ones I have seen are all good movies and absolutely deserving. You know, from my Minari opinion is just because of the kind of discussion around it, the dialogue around it. Like, I don't look at any category like, oh, it should have been nominated for this. I'm just surprised that it was not the most nominated film, because going into this, I expected it to be, and I thought it would be. Sound of Metal, absolutely a pleasant surprise. I'm totally with you. I think it's, you know, kind of similar to what we were just talking about. I think there are just overall fewer movies. Like, I feel like the movie industry as a whole has been kind of forced to be a little top heavy this year because, you know, there just haven't been that many movies that came out. And so the slice of those that are going to be nomination worthy is going to be smaller. And so, you know, again, not that I feel like there are really any undeserving nominations here, except for, but I mean, you know, it's, that's what the pandemic has done to these awards. And I feel like that's the biggest impact they'll have, is it has by nature changed, you know, some of the things where, like, you know, a Star Wars movie will get a throwaway visual effects nomination or a score nomination or like something. Those things are taken out. So in some of those other body of work nominations, I think are also taken out, because you have some much smaller time, like Riz Ahmed, like not a big time movie star getting nominated for Best Actor.
And our boy, Paul Racy.
Racy, which, did I not say that? I definitely said that. I'm so happy.
What are some of the other surprises that jumped out to you?
Okay, well, let's talk about Judas the Black Messiah here for a second. Because you and I watched that movie together, and I remember we were talking about it, and we paused that movie partway through, and I said to you during said pause, I was like, you know, I thought that Daniel Kaluuya was going to be like the main character, but it's really not. It's like definitely Lakeith Stanfield. And you were like, yeah, because it's Judas and the Black Messiah. Lakeith Stanfield playing Judas, Daniel Kaluuya playing the Black Messiah. But they're both nominated for supporting actor, which really begs the question, who was the main character? Was it Chicago? Was it just us all along? I don't know. No, but like seriously, that's weird.
I don't know if it needs a main character. I think it makes sense when you look at how the best actor race has kind of shaken out. I mean, who you have in that category, with the exception of, I think, Riz Ahmed, like all of those performances are pretty good, but we kind of know who's going to win that one, with Chadwick Boseman likely having that locked up posthumously. Right. So it might have made more sense for the production company for Judas and the Black Messiah to say, okay, we're actually going to push for two nominations in supporting instead of just trying to go for one in what was already a kind of a crowded field and leading role.
So what I'll say about that, which I cannot confirm, but I have seen sources report, is that the studio pushed Lakeith Stanfield for a leading role, and it was the Academy that put him in supporting. So, you know, I can't confirm that. I can't say for a fact that's true or not. But, you know, that wouldn't really necessarily surprise me if that were the case.
I think neither of us expected for both of them to be nominated, though. Like, I think we both... Yes. Kaluuya was a lock, but I was very pleasantly surprised to see Lakeith, because I think Lakeith's performance... You know, Kaluuya's is very hard because he is portraying this kind of martyr figure that has been studied and is... I don't know if it's very well-known, but he's fairly well-known in the culture. Lakeith is also playing a real person, though, who I don't think anybody knew about before this film came out, and he does a good job of emulating that person and also has the more kind of interesting inner conflict than Fred Hampton does. So I'm just really over the moon that Lakeith is going to get some recognition here, although I think it's fair to say we know that Kaluuya is the more likely to win that award than Stanfield.
Yeah, I'm with you on all that. I think that Lakeith Stanfield deserves everything in the world and more, except for maybe this award. But that's okay.
His time
actually,
will come.
Yeah, well, his time will come. And also, I don't even want to say a deserve, because I think that he absolutely would deserve this award. And if should he win, I'll be like, yeah, like hell yeah, let's go. But I think that Kaluuya is the if I were a betting man, I would place my bets on Kaluuya. Surprises. Best director.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me that we had two women directors in there. Another surprise to me is that Sorkin did not get nominated. And I think it's totally fair that he didn't, because he's not that great of a director. But
yeah,
with the love that Trial of Chicago 7 got elsewhere, you just kind of figured maybe that was a shoehorn in. So congratulations to Chloe Zhao and Emerald Fennell, making history, being the first time that two women were ever nominated for that award. Also, the fact that only five women had ever been nominated in that category before is quite notable, so that you've got two there. Zhao, it just adds to her nominations here. She's the most nominated woman in a single year in Oscar history for Nomadland. And I think we're going to talk about Nomadland a little bit later, but that's great for her. I think Emerald Fennell is a surprise to me, Yates, because this is her directorial debut with Promising Young Woman. I don't know how many times that's ever happened before, where you get Oscar nominated on your debut. And Thomas Vinterberg getting recognition for his film Another Round, which is also nominated in the international film category. A great Danish film there. Just didn't expect for that one to kind of come in and swoop a spot, especially since we had seen, I felt like this was a pretty competitive category. There were quite a few films that could have been up.
I love to see any time that a foreign film is nominated in a non-foreign category. I think that just kind of makes the Oscars better and works to expand the reach of cinema and global cinema in an American and just, you know, in a global sense. So, absolute shout out to Thomas Vinterberg, on top of the absolute shout out to Zhao and Fennell. My surprise, not a huge surprise, Spike Lee, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
Well, let's just hop into it. I mean, that's kind of that. It's a surprise. That's a snub, right?
Yeah. I you know, in that movie, as I said, not my favorite movie ever, but I thought that Spike Lee took some risks, and I thought that a fair number of them paid off. And I thought that, you know, from a directorial specific standpoint, that was a very, very solid showing. On top of Spike Lee, I thought there were a couple of supporting nominations that could have been taken out of there, especially Delroy Lindo, who I was not a huge fan of his character and some things, but there is no denying that it was portrayed excellently. So that's a little bit of a disappointment. The score, which is what it was nominated for, like, yeah, okay. I thought that the score and the way that it fit in that movie was very interesting, but I put that on more of a director than a composition and composer thing. So even the one it got nominated for, I put like third or fourth in what it should have been nominated for.
To me, it's just, this is one of the quote unquote bigger movies we got this entire past year. It came out during the summer, which might have been what hurts it in these nominations. The fact that it came out in June 2020 feels like ages ago, especially in a pandemic. So maybe that's what's hurting it too. But yeah, Yates, I agree. No Spike Lee in directing, a little surprising. No Delroy Lindo in supporting is even more surprising, since everybody seemed to say that was a lock. That was like the first performance in 2020 that everyone was like, that's going to be up for some awards here. And for it to not be, I wasn't expecting it. And I mean, it's a pretty competitive category, but when you see Paul Raci and you see two Judas and the Black Messiah nominations there, and even Leslie Odom Jr., who's good in One Night in Miami, I just would have figured that with Delroy Lindo and that performance, with how much time it had to kind of build a narrative around a campaign, but just surprised to not see that included. So I think The Five Bloods has got to be one of the biggest losers, just because it's not often you see a Spike Lee film not really have much of an impact at all on the Academy Awards.
Some other snubs: Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, no Best Picture, no sound categories. You know, it got nominated for kind of the period piece trifecta of production, costume, and makeup. So, you know, I think that's kind of a snub given the number of other nominations it got, that it didn't get Best Picture, it didn't get sound categories, which is pretty common for a movie musical. Not that it got any shortage of nominations, but I think just kind of those categories specifically, it was a bit of a surprise to see it missing.
So this one didn't, I wasn't the biggest fan of this movie. It didn't quite land with me as it has other people. And I know that you had it in your in top 10 list where I did not. Are you like surprised? How do you feel about it not being included in those other categories?
I don't think it belongs in Best Picture, frankly. I think, you know, it isn't killing me that it's not in sound categories, although I would have certainly understood if it had been. You know, the music aspect of it is not really a big one. So while there is some music and it is pretty impressive, it's not, you know, it's not like a La La Land or something like that where there's a bunch of important plot-driving musical moments. So, you know, it got no shortage of nominations. I don't really have a big problem with any of this. But I do think that it underperformed in some areas where there was an expectation that it would do a little bit better.
Sure. A film that got even less recognition across the board was One Night in Miami, which I think is very comparable because of them both being adapted from plays, also both being movies very much driven by Black actors and actresses. That one didn't get a Best Picture nomination either. Regina King did not get a Best Director nomination, which if she had, it would have been three women in that category, which would have been great. Some pretty good performances there in there. Leslie Odom Jr. getting the supporting nod, I think, is the one that makes the most sense. To me, though, Yates, what stands out for both Ma Rainey and One Night in Miami, I agree. I don't know if they necessarily belong in a true contender in Best Picture category, but Best Picture only had 8 films, and you can go up to 10. The Academy has gone up to 10 films, 10 nominations for Best Picture, and they just decided not to this year. That's really where I think they get snubbed is they got recognition in other places, but there was a clear and conscious decision, seemingly, or voters just didn't feel strongly enough about those films in their entirety to include them in that category, which we did too. But again, a little surprising when you've got 10 spots available. Another film that I think is kind of a downside from that is Pixar's Soul, which we know that the Academy is not really big on animated movies usually anyway, so it's not too surprising that Soul only had 3 nominations, but Soul is a damn good movie, and Soul was one, as I mentioned with The Five Bloods, one of the bigger movies we got this year that was going to be a theatrical event, and we ended up having to see it at home, but was still like a big deal in the culture when it came out. I mean, it's a really great film and touching in many ways. It's a Pixar movie that isn't just a kids movie. In fact, you and I very much had a discussion, is it even a kids movie, period? So I was thinking maybe this would be the animated movie, the Pixar movie that kind of broke through in the Academy in terms of nominations for the Oscars, but no such thing. It got, as I said, nominations for Best Animated Film, Best Score, and nominated in a sound category, which makes sense, but just a little surprised to not see a little more.
Yeah, I mean, it was my favorite movie of the year, which I think I'd put Sound of Metal above it at you know, if I kind of went back and redid my rankings, because I think about Sound of Metal, and Sound of Metal has stuck with me a hell of a lot more than Soul has, and I think we made those lists like 4 days after I watched Soul, but you know, I'm not too torn up about it. I think it could belong in Best Picture. It wouldn't seem out of place. If it won Best Picture, I would lose my mind. Like, that would, you know, it would not be deserving of that. You know, I don't really see anywhere where it's really missed out. So I'm not too torn up about it, but I agree. It's one of those things where I would have thought it would have gotten more, but when I look around, I can't really be like, this is the one it deserved. Like, this is the one more it deserved to get or whatever.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that, too. So all that being said, Yates, what are some of the races that interest you the most in terms of, now that we have all of the nominations in front of us, which races do you think you're going to monitor?
So I think that for a couple different reasons, the one that I'm most interested in is actor in a supporting role. So just to recap, just so everyone remember, Sacha Baron Cohen for Trial of the Chicago 7, Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield for Judas the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, and Paul Racy for Sound of Metal. One, I think of the One Night in Miami people, I probably would have liked to see Eli Gorey nominated, but I you know, that's fine. That was Muhammad Ali for, you know, anyone who doesn't recognize the name. I want to see Paul Racy win, although I agree that Daniel Kaluuya is a lock. And I think Sacha Baron Cohen absolutely deserved to be nominated, but for Borat, not for Trial of the Chicago 7. And that is my take. It's interesting to me that he was the acting nomination from Trial of the Chicago 7. I thought that someone like Mark Rylance might have done a better job in that movie slash had a little bit more of an opportunity to do an Oscar worthy performance. But I think Sacha Baron Cohen nominated for Borat would have been a great, great nomination in this category. Because I, you know, that's a very difficult movie to make. That it's a very difficult role to play in such a kind of movie, and he did a very good job with it. And he literally changed, probably very mildly, but he had some impact on American politics during a presidential election because of that movie, which is really effing impressive.
It's pretty wild. The Academy, notable not comedy fans. I can't tell you the last time a true comedy ever got, like, real recognition there, but especially this Borat movie is impressive because his reputation precedes him. And if you watch it, they had to change what the movie was going to be about because of the pandemic. They were shooting it to do one thing and then very clearly had to revert course and create a new film on the fly because of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is pretty impressive. I've got a couple races that interest me for other reasons because I just am not sure what's going to happen. One of them is supporting actress, which in the Globes, which at the moment, again, the only other award show we have to base it off of, went to Jodie Foster for The Moratorian. Not even nominated in this one. Instead, you have Maria Bakalova for Borat's subsequent movie film, Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy, Olivia Colman for The Father, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Yoo Jung-yoon for Minari. I just don't know really what would be there. I mean, Olivia Colman and Glenn Close have both won Oscars in the past, so you don't really have, like, a narrative around them. Maria Bakalova, we said with Borat, they don't recognize comedies very much, so I'm not entirely sure if they would look at that performance and take it seriously. Yoo Jung-yoon, very good in Minari. I hope that the Academy does indeed watch Minari for the first time, or maybe the second time again before voting. I think she's very good. Just a little surprised to see her included here. I think Amanda Seyfried is probably the front runner. This seems like one of the categories that Mank has a real chance in winning its nomination. But this one stands out to me because I just don't know what would happen. Some of the other races are best score. I love the score category always because we always get to hear little clips, which is nice. And I think it's just a strong year in terms of the scores that were nominated, which were The Five Bloods, Mank, Minari, News of the World, which I haven't seen, and Soul. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross getting two nominations in the same category. I guess the real race here is, is it them versus the field? That seems to stand out to me, but really all of the movies that I've seen in this category that are nominated have really good music. The last one is the screenplay categories, which I always find interesting. I think there are some films that you could build interesting narratives around here. I am surprised that Mank did not get an original screenplay one because Fincher's father wrote the film and then Fincher finished writing it and made it kind of in his father's honor. And that kind of thing usually, I think, gets a lot of Academy attention, especially with Mank getting just a ton of nominations in this award show. Just surprised to not see it included here, but I think it opens the door to what could be some interesting races, especially in original screenplay. I think adapted, you probably have to lean Nomadland there because of all the recognition it got during the Globes. And I think Yates, that's worth talking about, or that's a good transition here. Mank got the most nominations of any film with 10. I think Nomadland is probably the front runner to win the most Oscars because of the recognition it got at the Globes. So how many, you know, Mank with its 10, do you think that we're going to see a similar situation to what Netflix had last year with The Irishman, where it got 9, but it didn't take home any?
I would not be surprised. I think that kind of looking through all of the nominations, it's not the front runner. I mean, maybe in a couple.
Let's go through. Let's take a look and see what.
So best picture, not gonna win. I'm pretty comfortable saying that right off the bat.
I'm gonna go. Let's go from the bottom. Production design. Do you think Mank production design there? That one seems kind of likely to me compared to The Father, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, News in the World, and Tenet. I think it has a pretty good shot there.
Yes, I think I haven't seen The Father, but I do think that it does have a pretty good shot. Music for original score, I don't think it has. I think that Soul wins over that.
Hey, easy now. We've got a predictions episode to do. Don't give away your picks yet.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't think Mank wins that.
Makeup and hairstyling, yes or no?
No.
Sound? Probably not. When you have Soul and Sound of Metal in the same category.
Right.
So, costume? Probably not.
No.
There are other films that might. I mean, maybe. That one's a maybe, but you can't say it's a lock. Cinematography? Also kind of a maybe, but that also seems like one where Nomadland could take it. That one's a no. Directing?
Directing is, first of all, directing is a stacked field. Like,
it's great.
There's a lot of horses in that race. I'm going to go with, it could happen.
It could happen. I feel like it's Chloe Zhao versus the field, though, because of how strongly Agreed. Nomadland has done Agreed. So far.
And if it's not Chloe Zhao, I feel like it's Lee Isaac Chung.
Sure.
Honestly. Like, I think David Fincher is at best third.
So then you move to actress in a supporting role. Maybe Amanda Seyfried there, as I was saying. That one seems one of the more likely ones.
I would put that one as a front runner.
And then you've got Gary Oldman in Best Actor, who I think everybody is saying that seems unlikely. It's just interesting that this film, Yates, I think a bigger deal was made of it because it was meant to be the Roma, the Irishman of this year for Netflix. And it's just, I just don't think many people really care too much about it. And to get 10 nominations, like, that's great, but I don't think there's any sort of race that it's in where there is a big narrative around it that people are going to be super duper interested in and either pulling for or against Mank, which is usually how the public discourse builds.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I think that a lot of it was not a very accessible film, in that I think that a lot of what made it really interesting was kind of its relationship and background of Citizen Kane. You had to have a working knowledge of Citizen Kane to get the full, you know, enjoyment out of the movie. And even then, like, I've seen Citizen Kane twice. I thought that movie was like boring and just relatively uninteresting. So sorry, David Fincher.
It definitely leads to the question of, you know, how Netflix is going to do if Mank gets shut out entirely or does not bring home a lot. You know, Netflix led all studios with 35 nominations. Yates, they did the exact same thing last year. They had 24, so they've improved on that even more so this year. And obviously, it's got Trial of the Chicago 7 in the running too, which was originally a Paramount film that they purchased during the pandemic. So they've got their, you know, they've got a bunch of different irons in the fire. But man, this just doesn't feel like the year. In a year where there are no major blockbusters out there, you would think Netflix would be able to pounce. This does not feel like they're going to really break through.
I totally agree. I think that, yeah, I think that you're totally right. I think that there are a couple movies in here that have a pretty good shot at winning more Oscars than Netflix does.
It's just they've had some really strange luck, right? I mean, their best opportunity was probably in terms of best picture, in terms of the like top tier categories. Their best shot was probably Roma, and it lost to Green Book. Last year, I mean, Marriage Story was one of my favorite films. It was really good. They also had The Irishman, too. But they ran into an absolute buzzsaw of Parasite, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like, there were some really good films last year, too. You got to start wondering, like, when is it going to happen for Netflix, if not this year, and if it hasn't yet?
I don't think it's not going to happen for Netflix. Like, I think it is going to happen, but it just hasn't yet. I think part of that is that there is a bit of a prejudice against streaming. As, like, Martin Scorsese kind of recently put voice to. And so if someone sees something that's a Netflix movie.
Spielberg has very explicitly said, Spielberg doesn't even think Netflix should be nominated for this kind of stuff.
And, you know, I think that's probably a pretty common, within the Academy more so than the rest of American culture, I think that there are probably a fair number of people that feel that way and would just be less inclined to vote for it. I think that opinion will change. Netflix is only going to do better and better. Like, I think this year will be an anomaly for a little bit, but I don't think 35 nominations is their ceiling, because I think they're slowly going to corner. I think they're going to slowly corner more and more of the cinematic marketplace. So, you know, Netflix, be patient. It'll happen. Let people change their mind about you. It's going to be all right.
See,
this isn't your year.
I feel like the narrative has shifted in that way because they already are so involved in the cinematic world. And I just at the things have changed so drastically in the last year, and maybe it's different for people who work in Hollywood, but, like, you know, they're paying big time actors to do movies through their production studio now. They have a movie with The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot that's coming out within the next year.
Right, and how many Oscars is that going to win, Brighton?
Well, that's a different – what I was going to say is that's totally different. But there are a lot of people in Hollywood now that I think are doing things with Netflix. So I think the perception has changed there. It's just interesting that their prestige filmmaking hasn't necessarily been able to bring home the hardware yet. And it feels like their opportunities to do so – I mean, we've already seen – you know, with Prime Video, Sound of Metal is their, like, chief movie here. But in the past, Manchester by the Sea is a great example of Prime Video swooping in and getting some big award recognition. Like, there are other contenders that I think are going to catch Netflix in terms of the quality of production. Maybe not into the sheer quantity with the nominations that Netflix is earning here. But I think their window to be, like, the first streaming-specific film production company to win something big is, you know, it's changing. The times are changing, and it's just curious. It's just curious that if they haven't done it yet, and in this year where there's nothing in theaters that would be up for it, to have Mank feel as dead as it does. And maybe it's just the feeling around Mank this year that is leading me to say this, but to have Mink feel the way that it does right now is just a little strange. So with all that being said, I'm still super excited for these. We do not have all that long to wait. We're going to be bringing you a predictions episode before too long. I feel pretty good. We've seen most of these movies, Yates.
Yeah, there's only, I've only not seen, I think, two of the Best Picture nominees. The first time that's ever happened. And that's again, that's just because it's a little top heavy and it's all watch at home easily stuff. So, but yeah, it's I'm still a number of things I'm looking forward to seeing. Promising Young Woman, chief among them.
Yes.
I think that has been at the top of my list for a while, as has Wolfwalkers, which I don't think will win, but this kind of reminded me, oh yeah, I need to see that, and we'll try and get it watched before the awards. But it is not as much of a priority as Promising Young Woman or the documentaries. That is, given that I've seen most of the movies nominated in the upper awards.
And I've seen zero of the docs.
Yes, and I've seen one. So that is the primary goal between now and then.
Well, ahead of April 25th, we're going to have our predictions episode where we're going to go through all of the categories and make our calls and see how well they do. And by then we'll see if any more narratives around these races have developed. We'll be keeping you updated on that, but, you know, exciting times, Yates. We're into the thick of it now, and looking forward to it greatly. But until then, Yates, where can people find our Rated P content?
Well, usually at Twitter, at Rated P Podcast, our Facebook page, our Letterboxd, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks so much, guys. We will see you next time.